You have the same piece of paper again. I wish to move on. This is an endless subject that we have been on illustrating. Those who profess to be wise and have become morons because they are the objects of God's wrath. Not a wrath to come, though that certainly. I don't know who's directing, but whoever's directing, don't run any more crawls while I'm preaching. You run the crawls and put the numbers up on the rerun. This lifetime, they don't see it on shortwave. And I've already told them my name with the medical records. I don't want any distraction going across this screen up here. The subject has been simple, but hard to accept. Whatever the level of your knowledge of God, and Paul starts with the simplest level, which means everybody at least has that level. And that which happens to those who do not respond properly to that general level of revelation, in quantum leaps, must be multiplied against those that have more knowledge opportunity. If a poor, dumb heathen coming out of a cave after drawing pictures in southern France and cannot recognize with wonder there is some divine power, supreme to create it, divine above all that we can say or do. And if he is going to be condemned and have something taken from him for not recognizing God's hand on the creation, just that simple, what do you think is going to happen to those of you that are camped out in the light? Plutocrats, as Paul said to the Corinthians, in that case, in the spirit, in the illustration I'm using, plutocrats in your knowledge. You've been given more evidence. My testimony just given is enough to condemn every seeing eye and hearing ear that heard it this morning. The point I'm making is the point that Paul is making, which is the point that God made. Don't trifle with the knowledge he provided you, because if God is God, he don't have to tell you or show you a damn thing. Well, I want more. Well, who to bleep are you? Who's going to come out on top of things in the end if God exists? Well, that's axiomatic and self-evident. If there is a God, he'll be on top at the end. And by the time I get there, I will recognize him. That's the point of this message. He ain't letting you wait that long. You take the knowledge you have and you give him recognition, awareness of his presence, and worship and thanksgiving, or continued resisting out of the psychological state that first and foremost just doesn't want to recognize a boss and bow down to him because we want to be the boss. We want to talk God into pleasing us. Instead of us pleasing him. And there's no generation in the history of man worse than this one. Because you have been brought up in an educational system, me first. You are conditioned to think that way. Your frame of reference is not even thought about. And that's why the preachers will fill churches when they make God a butler, a banker, a provider, as they came around Jesus when he offered loaves and fishes and fled when he talked to the cross. It didn't take any sacrifice to come to get loaves and fishes. Not even his disciples were there when he bought your redemption and mine. He went to the cross alone. But having done that, the scab has been pulled off, the boil is burst, and God now is offering eternal life to those who trust him, and not just a delayed wrath to those who don't. He takes from you something. He takes a gear out of your head's mechanism. You can no longer see God. If he stood in front of you, you'd find another explanation. It's not in you, because he took it away from you. No man cometh to the Father, save the Spirit draw him. Deep calleth unto deep. The transmitter, which is God's knowledge, must have a receiver, and God put the receiver in everybody. But if you do not turn it on, let it flow, listen to the revelation, whatever the level he's given you, he takes it out. Like Pitney Bowes. Postage meter you lease from them. Break the lease, they take the guts out. Machine still sits there on the table. That's what we've been preaching. Why we've been here so long? Because you're an intelligent congregation. And you can figure it out. I think I know, don't care to say. There are certain ones being given last chances. Certain plutocrats exposed beyond measure. They were being given last chances to respond to God's sovereignty, God's love. You see, you don't choose what and where you're going to be when the light hits you. Sorry. I've used this illustration many times. I'm quite sure that there were times in the 11 years that Elisha followed Elijah, he could have wished that Elijah didn't come out of the woods and find him plowing at that moment. Of course, God knew he was there. Knew exactly the time and the place. And Moses, who had tried to help God 40 years earlier and got humiliated terribly, was fed up with it, and 40 years on the backside of the desert and a new wife and a plan for himself and all of his future is out on a desert place, and the bush starts glowing and a voice speaks, and it doesn't say, as you've heard me say in past messages, "Hey, you over there." Didn't say, "Hey, shepherd." 40 years had passed, and Moses hadn't heard a whisper from God. Moses knew exactly where he was. He'd come to get him. You may think you chose to turn the TV past Gene Scott one day, because he stirred up so much stuff that you've heard something about it, and you think curiosity. You may think you made some plan that was in your doing to be here. Usually I find those kind of people and get them out in a hurry. The ones that stick around, God chose you for a purpose. You have enough knowledge about God's calling. Many of you sat through Ephesians where God chose before the world was formed. Out from among those he didn't choose. Many of you have read the little book I wrote. We're sitting in Paul's prison. I had to confront in my own philosophic reasoning way. How do I make sense of this? This man picked up, totally dedicated to the Jewish religion, Pharisee of Pharisees, totally honest in his spirit that Christianity must be stamped out. And God knocks him down on a road and claims him. And what a trail. You see, I used to journey to that prison in Rome every Christmas and sit down there. I had come often enough and had relationships with the tenders of the tomb. That hewn-out cistern 19 feet underground. Solid rock. I had bought the time to be down there, and I wrote the little book, Hole in Rome, while I was there. But sitting in that, I would read his last letter to Timothy, the end of his ministry. For the Jews, 5 times. He said in another context, 5 times. Received thy 40 stripes, save one. Thrice beaten with rods, stone, shipwreck, peril. Now he's at the end, he thinks, of his ministry, and in that little prison, I'm sitting there reading his final letter to Timothy. Only Luke is with me. Bring the coat and the scrolls. I said, how do I make sense of this? You that have read the book, you're exposed to the knowledge. The only way I make sense of it, time versus eternity. If there's no eternity, if there is no God, if there's no creator, then to think that we were created for a purpose is nonsense. If there's no creator, no God, no eternity, why would the creator who sees his purposes aborted send his son and his son do what would rip apart the veil and provide God an opportunity to rescue us and fulfill his purpose? The only thing that makes sense of Paul, as I sat in that prison, time versus eternity. Time says he lost. Eternity was in view. And he used that word that enabled me to preach my dad's funeral. The Greek word for departure, which is limited to a ship laden for a journey, just setting out. Not coming in, just getting going. I came to town said I would not build an ordinary church. I was looking for that uncommon man or woman that would do what Paul did. Embrace eternity if it meant forfeiting time. It gets tougher every year with this generation. And the hosts of preachers who want to compete in the smorgasbord of life and make Christianity the most attractive lifestyle in time can't be. As I penned that, it made a mark on my life forever. I went back to the hotel, and as the book closes, I watched the sunrise. I was in the old Hilton in those days that sits on a hilltop and looks over the so-called Eternal City. And as the sun came up, I remembered what Paul wrote to Timothy. But he was also addressing God as he talked to the time of his departure. The time of my departure is at hand. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give to me in that day, and not to me only, but he included all of us who follow that path. And he said a strange word that you got to understand the Greek to understand, just like the departure. I have kept the faith. I have kept the faith. That doesn't mean he kept believing. It means he kept trust. I've finished my course. I have kept the faith. And then he commits it back to God. God gave him on that Damascus road and the fine tooling a trust. The super gospeler. The one that would rescue. The gospel that Jesus came to bring from the near loss of it with disciples who would have made it a splinter addition to legalism. Christ is Messiah, but you still got to keep the law. The Jamesian party. He gave a trust to Paul. The trust was that message in this book of Romans. The righteous by faith shall live. And the good news of the gospel that we're moving on into now as we go through this silhouette background of why the gospel is needed. God entrusted it to Paul. Didn't matter. I can repeat again. Didn't matter the stripes. Didn't matter the stones. Didn't matter the shipwreck. Didn't matter all Asia has forsaken me. Didn't matter peril in the wilderness. Didn't matter peril in the city. Didn't matter peril among false brethren. Didn't matter peril after peril. He kept the faith. He kept doing what God laid on him as a charge to do. Without deviation. Didn't matter, only Luke is with me. Bring the scrolls. And as you read that passage, he hands it back to God. In other words, he's saying, you trusted me, Lord. And through it all, I've just cataloged some of it. I've kept it. I've done what I committed to. I have worked out what you trusted me to do. I've proclaimed your gospel. But my time has come. So I hand it back to you, knowing that you'll find someone else that will carry it forward until we all gather around the righteous judge. When the sun came up, remembering that, I looked across Rome. Doesn't matter what the faith is. I'd just been the night before down in that prison listening to traffic above. When Paul was there, the Senate was right next door, Hadrian's Arch, Colosseum, Senate, Forum, Caesar's game area up to the right. All of Rome rattling over him. And Paul down there chained to a rock pillar. And I remember coming out of that tomb and looking at ruins. That's the remainder of that great Roman Empire. And as the sun came up, as far as you could see across that city called Eternal Church Towers. Doesn't matter whether you agree with all the different faiths involved. The Waldenses are there. You can find their tower. As well as the towering Catholic edifices. In symbol I saw and asked the question, who won? Paul's up there still accruing rewards. And God has managed to find somebody at the right time in every age that would decide that this message that Paul proclaimed is as important today as it was then. And will be able to say after the tap on their shoulder by God when it's over, I kept the faith. You as a congregation have been tapped on the shoulder. Staff members have been given opportunity. I didn't want to come here as pastor. Too dumb to see God's hand. God put us together. To proclaim this message to this generation. As Clara Grace said in a great revival of the last days, where many tangential voices will be raised up. When I didn't even have a church or a base, was at the end of my rope. That God would take my voice worldwide as a steering voice, because it's based on the Word. I never dreamed. God's way of doing it. But He did it. He gathered us together with a purpose, as He gathered Israel with a purpose, and they forgot the purpose that He had and decided that they would twist everything into what brought benefit to them. You have superior knowledge. If God would be as hard as He is on a heathen who can only see the sun come up in the morning and the stars at night, what do you think He's going to do to you? We're not talking about being beaten as Paul was. We're not talking about leading your children into an arena, singing songs of praise as you're thrown to animals. We're not talking about being made a torchlight by night in Nero's garden as you're incinerated on a pole. We're talking simply about taking a little responsibility of maintaining God first in your life. How great thou art. And what is this wrath of God? He takes your sense away. That's number one. Until you can no longer see him if he stands in front of you. Do you think those that have the sense taken away from them are aware of it? The criteria of the unpardonable sin is you no longer have any thoughts about it. You don't care. You can be me first without guilt. You can rationalize it in a New York minute. Your God sense is gone. There's nobody in this congregation that can appear any smarter or use dialogue any better than these geniuses I've been pointing to who are absolutely absent. Brains, it seems, on ultimate questions. They will still argue that we are sprung from some ape creature, Australopithecines. When the Laetoli footprints and the Canopy elbow date back to 4.5 million years, from 3.5 for the footprints to 4.5. How can you be an ancestor of that which preceded you? Your grandmother cannot be younger than you. But they will still say it. I don't want to get into that anymore. I'm ready to move on. I think I've illustrated how brainless they are. And I've been camped out until somewhere your eyes would begin to open. Hey, I can be put in that condition until I become that brainless. Simply for not wanting a God to rule me, not wanting God to have His will in my life. He that saveth his life shall lose it. Isn't that a paradox? I'm saving and at the same time losing. He that saveth his life shall lose it. He that loseth his life for my sake and the gospel shall gain it unto life eternal. It can happen. Not only is the sense taken away, but then having emptied your head of God sense, He gives you a shove. 24th verse. Deo peridokin autos. Therefore, handed over them, O Theos the God, to unclean forces, infected, ice, catharsion, unclean forces. In other words, you know what catharsis is? You know when you cathart? Well, the devil's been waiting to cathart. And he catharts through you, because God turns you over. Now let's address this problem with the devil for a moment. He's a gutsy guy. He is a guy. It takes moxie to take God on. God puts Adam and Eve in the garden. Oh, I don't believe that. Well, you know, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. I don't really care whether you view it as a myth or historical. I see it as historical. Why not? God created Adam and Eve. Don't tell me I've descended from Lucy. First place, they're a bunch of liars. I've proven you that. They make statues for our kids to look at, pictures of in books, and statues in museums with hands like us, when the bones are curved for gripping branches. It's a lie. Flat out lie. Piltdown hoax was not the only one. Archaeopteryx, so-called first bird, If you had time, I'd read you the evidence from this book that the feathers were added. Another fraud. Just improve the story. The so-called mitochondrion Eve with that empty DNA that passes from the mother unchanged, that they have now calculated the number of mutations, tell us how old the first mother from which all these mutations that are existing in the human race today came from. You know how they got their date. There are 1,000 I think I'll read this one. It's so funny. We're talking about liars. You know how they got this? The mtDNA in humans and chimps differ in 1,000 places. One mutation occurs about every 10,000 years. Therefore, since they have already assumed that we in chimps came from another ancestor, and they have already decided on false premises, when chimps and mankind split, and there's 1,000 mitochondrion differences between the chimps and humans, therefore, that many mutations had to occur, and therefore, they then assume 1,000 years for a mutation, all assumption, and divide it or multiply it, that one mutation occurs every 10,000 years, and therefore that means 10 million divided by chimps and humans, and they come up with a 5 million year for the split between chimps and man. All of it is based on fallacious assumptions. They then have another fossil fallacious assumption that Aborigines in Australia first populated Australia 40,000 years ago. And therefore, once they set that date, they have another dating method with when the Aborigines came to Australia 40,000 years ago. And they therefore have concluded using these two systems that the first human without a mutation was 200,000 years ago. Lies! Built on top of lies. In the first place, they don't know when a mutation occurs. They don't know whether it is fast or slow. And then another evolutionist says, we got to have punctuated equilibrium. Any immediate saltation, the lizard lays an egg, and out comes a bird. Don't talk to me about their lies. I spent weeks pointing it out. Here comes the devil, the father of lies. And he is telling Adam and Eve, go against God, and you'll be like God. It gets worse. The Son of God, eternal, who was there when Satan rebelled, emptied himself and moved into a tent of human flesh, comes to the baptism of John. God speaks out of the heavens and says, this is my beloved Son. And immediately it says, the Spirit, read it in Matthew 3 and 4, the Spirit led him into the wilderness. And the devil tempted him there. After he, don't talk to me about the scientific possibility, we're talking about the Son of God. I've already crossed the hurdle of miracles. I am one. 40 days and 40 nights, he fasted. And he's weakened. And the devil goes on the attack. And the first thing he offers him is cater to the flesh. Turn these breads to stone. or these stones to bread. Use your power for your purpose. The next one was the show-off temptation. Anything to get him off of the path. God called him, sent him here. Rather, he stepped forward in the councils of heavens as the fail-safe lamb slain from the foundation of the earth. And he came to do the will of the Father. Do you think it was always easy? No. He cries out in the garden, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. I said to someone this week the most poignant phrase that I have ever heard. Because I've come enough in my study to understand that here is the Son of His love. Here is the Word eternal, bathed in the light of God's glory, the source and radiance of it Himself that created this earth. Trusting God. Coming to do God's will. And it gives me hope, really gives me hope. Of all the statements from the cross was that one moment. That one moment when the Son of God Himself, just for a blink, doubted. Feeling the pain, whether you call it doubt or whatever, the humanness surfaced. A little bit of, if not me first, me not forsaken. Because He cried out, Father, why hast thou forsaken me? I'm sure when His imprint burned itself through as God raised Him from the dead. But at that moment, as my sins and yours of the world were dumped on Him, even Jesus had a moment. I repeat, if not me first, please God, me not forsaken. And He cries out. And believe you me, if you've ever loved someone, if you ever have, more than yourself, mothers with a child, someone truly in love, it hurts you more to see the one you love suffer than to suffer yourself. And what must have gone through God's heart and mind, knowing what He was going to do, but in that profound theological wonder, which is, I can fill a wall of my library with books on what was the emptying consisting of? Because He emptied Himself of some of His glory, which joined Him to us in a way that He can now be a high priest who was tempted as we are and felt as we feel. In a moment, why hast thou forsaken me? And the Father, knowing the end from the beginning, the Son having emptied Himself temporarily of some of that, how much no theologian can tell me. He sees His Son cry, why hast thou forsaken me? And has to wait 3 days to bring Him out of the tomb in order to be faithful to His word. And I'm sure He didn't have to wait 3 days for Jesus to know, because He ministered to dead spirits during that 3 days that His body was in the tomb. But there was a second. And when that was over, God opened the gates of the gospel which Paul is proclaiming. And I've said the scab came off the wound, and He's not tolerating, having paid such a price, His Son having suffered so much, having offered what we can do, which is trust Him, the other side of which is faithfulness. He has zero tolerance. And here sits Satan, who had the guts to tempt Adam and Eve, and the guts, and the third temptation was, show him all the kingdoms of this world. All of them. You can have them all. Jesus never contested the fact. Why do you think the Philippian letter says, you are snatched, the Ephesian letter, all of these epistles talk of salvation as a rescue effort. We are in the clutches of the prince of this world. He is the boss. You think you're free? Your only hope of being free from that evil master, the world, the flesh, and the devil, the rescue of God. Now he's taken the sense away from those who do not worship and thank him. There's something else. Here, this world is under the control. Read Daniel. Even Gabriel was delayed for weeks fighting the prince of Persia, not the earthly king. He could only defeat him when Michael, the prince of princes, comes to fight him back. This generation doesn't believe in God, and they sure don't believe in the devil, and Screwtape letters have never been more true. To this rookie demon, don't announce yourself and don't seek credit. We never had it so good. Nobody believes we exist. You either yield yourself to God, or he gives you a push and hands you over to unclean forces that infect you. Satan's standing there like piranha with his henchmen. Piranha to seize. God, instead of rescuing now, hands you over. 26th verse, hands you over to passions of dishonor. 28th verse, he took and emptied your mind of God's sense. Now he hands you over to a disapproved mind. Not only did he empty you of God's sense, he hands you over to evil forces that will corrupt and pervert the mind you have left. And then one of three times in the New Testament, if I wanted to write on the board some heavy Greek, the dative of content. Normally when you are filling something, using the verb to fill, you have a milk container. And you use the dative as the object to which the content is poured. So in the Greek, you always know that the milk, for example, is from a container outside of where it's going, and it's poured into another container. In this verse, following this last turnover, he turns you over, and the dative of content, you become a container where wickedness is filling you through and through from the inside out. Because the God sense has been removed, you are turned over three times, and wickedness, as truly as your DNA determines and your genes and genetic structure determines your behavior, you become a content of wickedness. That which God said, the wrath of God is poured out on Asabian or Asabian and Adikion, which is wickedness, unrighteousness. You become a container full of that. And this word's very interesting, lest you think it's just God sort of turned you loose. Mark 14, Jesus betrayed, handed over to Roman soldiers by a kiss from Judas. Handed over by the Sanhedrin to Pilate. Delivered up by Pilate to the will of the people. And in Mark 15, Jesus handed over to the soldiers to be executed. Same paradokon, same word. That's where you end up. Be my guest. Seek your own way. And make the devil's day. Oh, but. Follow me. I married a wife. I have to check her out. Boy, that proves God calls some dumb people. I bought a yoke of oxen. I have to right. I must bury my father. You think there's an excuse anywhere facing God's call that he hadn't heard? Well, I want to be called to heaven here on earth. I want a call that makes sure that when I step over the gate, the devil doesn't get in. Last time I checked the Bible, Satan still has access to the councils of heaven to accuse us. Until Michael is turned loose, as told in the book of Revelation, and cast him out of the heavens and limits him to this earth for a short season during the time of tribulation. He's still up there doing what he did in Zechariah's vision. Jesus found the demon-possessed man in the Sanhedrin, or rather in the synagogue. Why would the devil waste time on you when you're gone? I know I must be doing something right. I got the word. You notice the envelope was open. I just pulled it out. I got the word on Wednesday. I hurried home to rejoice with Melissa. And it was as though the devil said, "Damn, whatever he cusses." "I can't keep you, God, from healing this man and making him a testimony of miracle before this miracle service, but I can sure get all of his staff members, and I can sure get his congregation, and I can sure get everybody that will listen to me." And he turned it on. "And I can attack the equipment." Can you believe it? This will probably make you stay home. Of course, you know, I want to be like Paul. "Five times received thy 40 stripes, save one, but I want it in 70 degrees. "68, maybe. Can you believe that the air conditioning went out at King's House 1 yesterday afternoon? Now, I screamed and hollered and said, "I don't care what it costs. There's somebody in the air conditioning business that likes money." And last I heard, we got it fixed. We got it fixed. But if heat will keep you away, how long do you think it'll take you to get used to hell? Trifling with God's knowledge is serious. I made the decision in Paul's prison. That's why I kept going back every year. I'm casting my lot with eternity. Well, you've been blessed. I didn't know it when I cast. The paradox of what Jesus said, "If any man will come after me," Matthew put it in terms, "prefer his father, mother, wife, children, brother, sister, yea, and his own life also, and doth not take up his cross and follow me and forsake father, mother, wife, children, brother, sister, houses, lands, and his own life, cannot be my disciple." And one of them spoke up and said, "It's hard." And Jesus said, no man hath forsaken all of these, but the key word is forsaken. No man hath forsaken all of these things, but what he will have many times, each of those, and he repeated them, including houses and lands, not only in the life to come, but here also. God is in charge. I had to make the commitment. My life may still end up as dreary as Paul's appeared. But Paul was the winner. I'd rather be him in a New York minute and without seeking to say anything about his spiritual condition. He just happens to be the richest man in the world. I wouldn't trade places if I could be Paul or Bill Gates. It wouldn't take me a split second. Well, you say, how can I know? Well, you don't know what God's going to do with you if you commit yourself to him. You sure as hell know what God's going to do to you if you don't. And that's my message. Both your envelopes out. It's offering time. As we move on in Romans, I hope everyone has examined themselves. Could this message have been planned by God for me, because I'm trifling, sitting on the fence with the knowledge I have? Philip Torrey, one stranger in town, let it go. I'll be seeing you tonight for the miracle service. Good day.